Weekend Breakfast
with Googs and Sungu on 702.
Time for us to talk wellness. And this morning, we're talking about the impact of borderline personality disorder and ADHD and how that can affect your relationships. And this is because we received an email from Anonymous from one of our listeners looking for a little bit of assistance on this question. We are joined, as always, by our resident clinical psychologist, Dr. Kosi Giyane. Dr. Giyane, as always, it's good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
And so we received a question from a listener, and the email went as such. It goes as such. I was diagnosed with borderline personality and ADHD, and I'd like to know how these disorders coexist with one another. How do they affect my relationships with people? I have lost friends over the years. Can it be due to my borderline personality? And will all my relationships be affected by this? Could you ask Dr. Kosi to break it down for me? Kindly, Anonymous. So that is where we get the question for this morning's conversation.
Great.
And so let's start here. When we speak about borderline personality, what are we talking about?
Okay, so a personality has three elements to it, that it is internal to the person. It's their sense of self, their sense of their self-image, self-worth, self-esteem. Secondly, is that it is pervasive. In other words, it is the overall. It is characteristic of their overall way of being in the world and in relation to other people. And it is enduring. In other words, it's not just an episode that happens once, but can be traced through their life cycle as a pervasive way of being in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about the self-perception and the relations with others.
And so then what happens when there is a borderline personality disorder?
Well, a person with a borderline personality disorder is characterized by, it's about how they process information. And then how they then, the feelings that comes from there, and then how they behave. So a person with a borderline personality disorder is characterized by emotional instability. And that comes from their fear of, they are hypersensitive and hypervigilant to the slightest sense of rejection and abandonment, whether real, imagined, or even anticipatory on their side. And because of that, they become hyper-reactive to their reading of rejection or abandonment. They become hyper-reactive, need constant assurance, and they struggle to self-soothe or self-regulate the emotions. So they can be very erratic, and dichotomous in their thinking, and they may struggle to come back to base, to a sober, rational way of thinking, processing, and reacting to situations. So they are prone to hyper-reactivity and thereby prone to self-harm behaviors.
And so, Dr. Giyane, you mentioned that one of the big things is around the strong fear of abandonment, of being left alone. And I'm quite curious about that because, we always talk about how humans are these psychosocial creatures. We're creatures that are meant to be in community, whether it is familial, romantic, we're meant to be in herds, so to speak.
Yes.
And so I imagine that all of us in some way or another have this fear of abandonment. What differentiates the ways in which people with borderline personality disorder and the way that they experience it? Because I guess it's all about that need for community, that need to be with others. But it seems there's a particular way when you have borderline personality disorder that you experience it.
Yeah. You know, I think that the words that I used earlier on were the hypersensitivity and hypervigilance. Mm-hmm. So correct to your point about us being social relational beings. Mm-hmm. And borderline personality disorder talks to early life relationships, mm-hmm. you know, attachment issues, and how we have through childhood received or not received, you know. So the key characteristic is that it's the sense that they have not been met with or received with or engaged with in early life in a manner that made them feel seen, cared for, validated, a sense that they matter. And as such, their sense, they are very sensitive to rejection and abandonment, because that would be a golden thread of their early life experiences. And we talk about, you know, trauma or abuse is one of the key things that will have happened in early life. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking necessarily about, you know, huge trauma. And here's the thing, as you rightfully say, as children, we may have in some way or other experienced rejection or abandonment because perhaps our attachment figures for one reason or another have not been there for us. And perhaps for reasons that are justified, they had to go and work, they had to go and study, they had to be somewhere else and not there for you. But as the child, the child, you know, senses that abandonment and rejection, and it writes itself into who they are. They don't matter. They feel rejected, and it becomes about them. And that becomes a huge a challenge in how they then, growing up, enter into relationships, whether we're talking just social friendships or even relationships with people at work, and equally so with intimate partners. Mm-hmm. It becomes quite a key challenge within relationships.
And so the other part of the listener's question is around the interplay or the relationship between borderline personality and ADHD. Mm. And so how would ADHD impact potentially, you know, because the question is around relationships.
Yeah. What is likely to have happened is that we don't generally diagnose a personality disorder at an early life. Generally, you will only ascribe a certain personality disorder from the age of 18 onwards, because by then the argument is that that sense of self has stabilized. So what would have probably been observed earlier on, before around the age of 7, is the ADHD, which is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So as a child, this person would likely have, you know, exhibited symptoms of struggling with attention. You know, tasks at school, at home, they struggle to pay attention. They are forgetful. They are easily distracted by external stimulus. They struggle to sit still. So that inattentiveness, that hyperactivity, you know, they are very busy children in this and that, and also impulsivity. So that would have been part of the early life diagnosis, which then later on could be confirmed as part of what makes that borderline personality disorder picture.
Mm. And, you know, the question is also around, I've lost friends over the years, and will all my relationships be affected by this? And I guess part of the question there is also about, you know, treatment, management.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if in this instance we could even talk about a cure, but I imagine treatment and management would be the core things.
Yeah. So the cure, there is no cure for a personality disorder. And cure really comes from the medical side of things. In psychology, we don't use the word cure, mm-hmm. because it is not a disease. We're talking more about healing. Therapy is around healing, which is about coming to a place of wholeness. It isn't like, you know, if you take a tablet, this will go away. It doesn't happen that way. And especially with personality disorders, because it is the way that the person is, generally, personality disorders are very difficult to work with because one of the challenges is that from the person's perspective, they are egosyntonic. In other words, they are congruent with who they are, how they know themselves, and how they see the world. So for them, generally, they don't see it as a problem because that's how I am. That's how I've always known myself, right? And generally, it is the relationships struggles that they have with other people that then points to a personality disorder there. So in other words, this person, Anonymous, is talking about they've lost friends over the years, right? So that then becomes distressful for them, the fact that they can look back and see that they struggle to sustain relationships, and that is because of the way that they tend to relate to themselves and other people, which can be taxing for people. So it is something that will become, that will continue to be a struggle through their lives. The most important thing being, firstly, being aware of it. So the fact that a diagnosis has been made suggests that there were, you know, sufficient symptoms that pointed towards that. And that's the good part, that at least you now know, because you can't change what you don't see. And this then takes us to the second point that we made. You talked about what do we do about it. So generally, a person with a personality disorder would benefit from lifelong therapy to help them process and to manage those extremes, for example, of hypervigilance, to help them read nuances in people differently and to regulate how they then react to those nuances that they read in relationships and conversations with people.
Mm. Dr. Gianni, a thing that seems to come up as, you know, one of the things that is a symptom or part of the, I guess, the experience of having a borderline personality disorder is self-harm,
yes,
and thoughts of, you know, fantasies or mental images of hurting yourself or even going about hurting yourself, which I imagine can be quite distressing for the person experiencing them, but also then for the people who are in community with that person, your loved ones, your family, your friends, your partner, if you have a partner.
Yeah.
And so in that instance, do we have a sense of what is the, I don't think there's just one way, but what are some of the ways you can then assist someone if they are having, you know, they're you know, dealing with a diagnosis of borderline personality. One of the ways that they experience it is ideation or thoughts of harm. Is there a way that, you know, the people around you can assist, or is it the kind of thing that will always need or generally needs a professional?
I think it's both, in the sense that, you know, this would be the people that are your general circle of people that you live with, or work with, or socialize with. It always helps when people, the person with the personality disorder, knows that they have that disorder and have been diagnosed, so they have the information about it. But it is equally important for the friends, the people in that person's circle or life, that also are informed, that understand what is going on, and they can help the person in day-to-day interactions to, you know, to help them think differently, to help them see things differently, to engage in ongoing conversation with them, because it is only through that reflective capacity that helps them to manage how they react to situations. And should it be that it does go to the extremes of self-harm, like cutting, for example, or suicidal ideation and things like that, to be supportive. And I know it can be very, from an outsider perspective, it can seem like it is manipulation. And in the person's world, it is how they are trying to manage how they are feeling, those feelings of loss of control, anxiety, and so on. And this is their way of managing those feelings. And it is about helping them to contain, to soothe, to assure them, and when necessary, to refer, you know, and medication may play a role in helping them manage those extreme feelings and sometimes hospitalization, depending on where on that continuum of self-harm behavior they may be in.
Mm. The other thing I'm seeing is, you know, this kind of idea of impulsive and risky behavior. And sometimes it doesn't present as what you would think risky behavior is. So, for instance, you know, if someone was drinking excessively and then drinking and driving, or driving very fast and recklessly, or gambling, that could be seen as impulsive and risky behavior. But I didn't realize that, for instance, sabotaging one's success by quitting a job suddenly or ending a really good relationship is also an example of impulsive and risky behavior.
Indeed. Yeah. So it is about, you know, helping the person. Their default place to go to is that impulsivity, you know, and part of the treatment or the therapeutic journey is around deferring decisions, you know, to defer that impulse regulation. And that's what they would need to learn, whether it is about, I'm upset because this person did this, that or the other, to rather take a step back and, you know, to learn to self-soothe, to calm down, count to 10, you know, and things like that, take a walk, exercise and things like that to help regulate those emotions and to then defer those decisions that they normally would make impulsively, to defer those decisions. So those are part of the strategies that they can, you know, develop over the years, and to be able to see how these patterns play out in different areas of their lives.
Mm. And so just you mentioned such a, I think, an important thing earlier. It is not about cure, it is about healing. So there isn't going to be a day where you wake up and you don't have the disorder, but it is about, I guess, managing it such that it doesn't, you know, you don't have these, I guess, these highs and lows in your experience of your condition.
Yeah, and being able to recognize the extremes, you know, and dichotomous ways, because they tend to think in things are black or white, and it is about developing that sense of grayness in the world. Things aren't always just black and white. You love me or you hate me, you know, sort of things. It's about what sits in between, and it's about developing that perception of the gray areas of life, because that's what life is, right? And it is, how do I then, if I perceive something differently, then it means I will feel differently about it and therefore can act differently in relation to it.
Dr. Gianna, as always, it is great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your time.
My absolute pleasure. And thank you to Anonymous for the message.
Thank you very much. That is our resident clinical psychologist, Dr. Kosi Chiane, joining us this morning.